Hello and welcome to Palace Intrigue. I am your host, Mark Francis. Well, Caitlin Flanagan writing for The Atlantic under the headline, Meghan Markle didn't do the work. Looks like Prince Harry married a girl just like the one who married dear old dad. We recognized all of it, the desperate unhappiness, the adoration of the masses, the beautiful clothes worn beautifully, but especially the easy and immediate way of reaching out to commoners and blessing them with the life-changing gift of her attention. He found and then gave to us, the grateful public, another Diana. And Meghan Markle more than repaid the palace for her admission to the Golden Circle. She captured the affection of the entire world. She pumped up interest in the royals. And she had much to offer, all of it gladly given. Like Diana, she had the power to help the royal family survive a major challenge to its relevance. But once again, a talented and life-giving outsider was rejected by the host organism. In the couple's interview with Oprah Winfrey, Meghan looked poised and thoughtful and managed to make her series of shocking revelations seem reluctantly tendered, a hostile witness having the terrible truth pulled out from her, much more in sorrow than in anger. When Harry was allowed into the conversation, he sat beside his wife looking like he'd been shot from a cannon. Before he met Meghan, he was a prince of Europe, almost a crown prince. A young man whose life was part of a continuation from Excalibur to Afghanistan, where he fought with valor in the manner of Prince Hal finding within himself Henry V. Now, however, he is like Antonio, tempest-tossed and thrown up upon the wide beaches of the brave new world. Once he led men into battle, as his forebears had done for generations, now he is a Californian with a Spotify deal, charged with thinking up some podcasts, which could be a heavy lift. For Harry, the situation is evolving. In a later section, Flanagan writes, "Before Meghan, thousands of English girls of colour harboured the same princess dreams that white English girls had harboured for centuries. But when they saw pictures of the royals on the Buckingham Palace balcony, at their weddings and special events, and during the exciting moments when they presented their new babies to the world, they didn't see a single person who looked like them. They saw a family that, as Stephen Colbert put it, was a medieval selective breeding program." Meghan placed an oxygen mask on the monarchy, offering the potential to future-proof the institution for at least a couple more decades. Suddenly, a beautiful mixed-race woman was having the enchanted wedding, emerging from an ancient chapel under an enormous bower of flowers, and then riding off in an open coach with her prince beside her. Like Diana, she had the magic touch, a preternatural ability to make a powerful connection with people. In even just the moment or two of encountering them on a rope line, crowds appeared wherever she went. She was loved. Fast forward to the present, Flanagan writes, "Part of Meghan's problem, it turned out, was her naivety about the workings of the royal family, which she had assumed would be similar to the workings of celebrity culture. What was she, Meghan Markle, a simple girl from Los Angeles, to have understood about such an institution as the British? How was she to know that Her Royal Highness, Elizabeth II, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of her other realms and territories, Queen, Head of the Commonwealth, Defender of the Faith, was in any way different from the Lady of Gaga?" Meghan told Oprah that she had never even Googled her future husband's name, a remark that united the viewing world in hilarity, time zone by time zone. It was an assertion that strained the credible, but it was necessary to her contention that she had no idea that the Windsors had not, as we now say, done the work when it came to exploring their own racial biases. Had she herself done some work by punching her beloved's name into a search engine, she would have understood that she was not marrying the most racially conscious person on the planet. She would have seen pictures of him dressed as a Nazi at a costume party. His great-granduncle, briefly Edward VIII, had palled around with Adolf Hitler, and a videotape of him introducing a fellow cadet as "our little packy friend." The palace said that Prince Harry used the term without any malice, and as a nickname about a highly popular member of his platoon. But the palace had no good explanation for why Harry introduced another cadet in the video by saying, "It's Dan the man. Fuck me, you look like a raghead." As for Harry, Flanagan writes, "Harry sat there beside Meghan, 7,000 miles from home, in the land of rich Californians and Maya lemons and eucalyptus trees trailing Spanish moss. He had plighted his troth to the unexpected and very beautiful woman. He had hurt his grandmother and alienated his father and his only brother. He had thought that having Bishop Michael Bruce Curry deliver the homily at his wedding would reverse 1,000 years of English racial attitudes, but he had been wrong about that. He was a combat veteran, a prince, the grandson, great-grandson, and great-great-grandson of English monarchs, and now he was going to have to think up some podcasts. This one will be right back. Now that he's not a royal, Cosmo wonders what Harry's name is now. Cosmo writes, his full name is Henry Charles Albert David, which begs the question, does Harry just not have a last name? Due to being a royal, Harry doesn't have a last name like us mere mortals. In fact, the official name listed on his son Archie's birth certificate is His Royal Highness Henry Charles Albert David Duke of Sussex. However, back when he served in the military, Harry used the last name Wales and was known as Captain Harry Wales. While Harry doesn't technically have a last name, his son Archie uses Mountbatten Windsor. Why, you ask? It's a little complicated, but this name came into royal use back in 1960, when the Queen and Prince Philip decided they wanted their non-titled descendants, meaning royals who don't use HRH, to have their own special last name. The royal family's website states that the Queen's descendants, other than those with the style of Royal Highness and the title of Prince, Princess, or female descendants who marry, would carry the name of Mountbatten Windsor, which is why Archie, who doesn't have a title, uses the last name, and Harry, who is a prince, does not. In case you're curious, Mountbatten is the last name of Prince Philip's maternal grandparents, while Windsor is the surname George V gave his descendants before Elizabeth switched things up. Harry can use Mountbatten Windsor whenever he wants. Part of the Queen's 1960 declaration states that when members of the royal family need a last name, think official paperwork, they can use Mountbatten Windsor. On top of that, it should be noted that Prince William and Kate Middleton's kids use the last name Cambridge at school, which suggests Harry could possibly use Sussex as a last name if he wanted to. And there you have it. Please follow us on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm Mark Francis. My thanks to John McDermott. This is Ballas Intriguing. Good times.